Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting in the planet. Enjoy the show.
Life Conversations, the radio show, is dedicated to empowering its listeners spiritually, emotionally, socially, and financially. The radio show provides the platform for the stimulation of thoughts, conversations, and ways of being that allow listeners to explore and examine what it is they believe and decide whether what they believe is keeping them stuck and disempowered or empowering them to live their best life.
Hi, this is Jack Armstrong, author of Lessons from the Source. You're listening to Ask Life Coach Ade on LifeConversationsRadio.com. Many blessings to you.
Many blessings to you. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for saying yes to life. Thank you for being here. Oh, I'm so glad to be here. I'm so grateful. We are on a journey, the journey to find balance, the journey to love, the journey to self, each and every one of us. It doesn't matter what path, which highway, which superhighway we're on, which part of our consciousness we're tapping into. Personally, I truly believe we're all on the same road, and we need each other. Why? Because we are interconnected, we're one with the one, and sometimes there's some things we don't have to trip about. But if you must trip, it's okay, because when you trip, you get to find yourself. You get to know who you are. You get to ask yourself, what was that about? Why was I tripping? Why did that piss me off? Why did I get on my nerves? You got to be willing to go within to find out who you are. Carly Jackson.
I am great. I am wonderful. I am whole. I am peace. I am here. I am strong. I'm free. Well, I'm the delight of God. I am you. I am healed. I am love. I am great. I am wonderful. I am whole. And I am free.
And that is the truth, and there's nothing you can do about who you are. You are free to be who you want to be, choose to be, hang with. You have a choice. It's not about the labels, but it is if it is for you. But the most important thing is to remember that you're on this plane, this planet, to discover who you are, to know what you know, to think about what you think about, and to be able to question life. So whatever you believe in, I don't give a hoot. As long as you're a wonderful human being, you can love, you can heal, because we need each other. Ain't nobody ever gone to a hospital saying, oh, yeah, I need blood transfusion, but please make sure it's from a Muslim. Please make sure it's from a Christian. Make sure they're spiritual. Ultimately, it's just intellectual masturbation. When you get beyond that and you find your own peace, you don't even have to debate with anybody. And then you can boldly ask questions, you know? But here's a question that we want to ask. I want you to ask yourself, am I wrong? You know, if you want to go out and do your own thing, find your own self. And people say, no, stay in the box. The question is, am I wrong for seeking my own peace and happiness? Nico and Vinx put it just like this. We need each other, and we'll be back. Nico and Vinx, am I wrong? They're coming. Come on, folks. We've got a show to do. There you are.
Try thinking that we could be something for real. Now am I wrong for trying to reach the things that I can't see? But that's just how I feel. That's just how I feel. That's just how I feel.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Woo-hoo! Am I wrong to be singing on the show? Oh, no, I don't care what you think. life is good. It's getting better. It's just how I feel. I'm sorry, I can't help you. Nico and Vinks, they're asking the question, am I wrong? It's just how I feel. I can't help you. This is my feeling. This is mine. What a perfect song for the show. And I'm so excited about today's conversation. Oh, my God. All the energy around this show. Let me calm down. It's time to breathe in. Let's breathe in the breath of life, the breath of God, and breathe out, knowing that all is well right where we are, because there is no spot where God is not, where good is not. And my sister is here waiting, and if you don't even say that word, we're one, we're connected. So I'm super excited about today's show. We've had a lot of energy. But so let me just pace myself. Nico and Vinks, am I wrong? Their website address is nicoandvinks.com. N-I-C-O. And now let's try that again. Nico and Vinks. Or Vince. There you go. I'm just so excited. Let me calm down. Let's start the show all over again. Okay, let's start back. Let's go back. Welcome to the Ask Life Coach Adair radio show. That was Nico and Vinks. The website address is N-I-C-O and Vinks, V-I-N-Z.com. Okay. Let me welcome you home to your consciousness, to yourself. Good afternoon, good evening, good night, good morning, good day to you, wherever you may be at this very moment in time. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in to Life Conversations Radio, where change begins and change is inspired. And when you catch the inspiration, when that breath of life, that breath of God breathes you, catch a new awareness, you can't help but be different. You can't help but challenge an old way of being and be so much more. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for saying yes to life. You are listening to the Ask Life Coach Adair Radio. On Life Conversations Radio, I am your host. That's right. The I Am Presence is uniquely expressing as Life Coach Adair, the Naughty Professor, the Metaphysical Rebel, and all the other names. And I am so grateful to have you here, you showing up to be who and what you are, to be part of your own transformation, your own growth. I welcome all of you, those of you listening online. Thank you for tuning in. Those of you listening on the phone lines, thank you, thank you, thank you. And those of you listening on the archive, thank you for tuning in, because the only time is now. And, of course, we can't forget our Within Radio listeners. We appreciate you. It's a new day. It's a new time. It's the time for us to really ask the hard questions, the deeper questions, to think about what you're thinking about, to question what you say you know, to question your title, your identity. And here's a question for you. What if everything you believed about yourself is a lie? Then what? It takes courage to ask yourself those kind of questions. How do you know who you are? Who are you? What are you? Why are you here? I love it. I love it. I love it so much that I want to say. And, you know, it's interesting how a title would change a conversation or a label. Or, yeah, label. Let's do that. Titled label would change a conversation. But I'm going to save that for later, I think. I don't know, because I want to hear a lot from Candace. But I would share this, because once I start talking to Candace, I won't be able to go here. Well, I can, but I won't, because I got to ask questions. We've had questions, conversations about, wait a minute, why would you want to invite an atheist to this show? But why? I don't get it. And I love questions like that. And my answer was, I mean, come on now. You've heard me say, I don't care if you believe in God or not. I don't care if you're Muslim, Christian, Buddhist, nothing, no faith seeking, pagan, traditionalist. If you have your altar and you worship your orishas and you're atheist, it really doesn't matter. That's the problem. That's the issue here. We get so caught up in titles and we think it's got to look a different way, a certain way. And I also get it. Because we're living out not just the mass consciousness. We're living out stories and ways of being and conditioning that was passed down to us even before we could make up our own minds. And that's why I always say life is not for wimps and a spiritual path is for gladiators. Are you bold enough to tell the world who you are? That is the question. You're listening to the Ask Life Coach at a Radio Show. The number is 347-426-3346. 347-426-3346. Make sure you press 1 on your keypad. If you have questions, comments, thoughts, doubts, worries, fears, disagreement, disbelief, shock, call in. This is the House of Love, and we have set the intention to support you on your transformation journey, because wherever there is love, nothing else can stand up to it unless it's matching that love vibration. This is the House of Love. So, Electra, my dear sister friend, it's nice to see you. Yvette is in the house. Silent listeners disguised as guests. Other listeners listening on the phone line, thank you very much. Candace is in the house. Ambassador's in the house. Thank you all for tuning in. Let's bring on the lady with the silk voice, Celeste Morgan, the mother of the celestial moment with Celeste Morgan. And hey, Celeste, how are you?
I'm great. I come with jokes today, Life Coach today.
Oh,
I hope you had, okay. Yes, I have a joke. I hope you had a wonderful weekend. I had a great time hanging out with you and our listeners at the revamped Sounds of Soul with a day of Nifa Woshe. Saturday nights at 9 p.m. are still hot. We didn't have to go on hiatus, so yay for that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's St. Patrick's Day, which is a national holiday for some of my friends, not just a religious holiday. It's a national cultural holiday for them, and we have a guest coming up, Reverend Rio, who sends out St. Patrick's Day blessings with the name Kelly and that Irish blood running. So big shout-out to her, and here's my joke for you, sir. Every time you say the word lies, you sound just like Kathy Bates from Coven, talking about that little black box. You do it now. Every time you say lies, okay, go ahead, do it today, do it.
They said, well, I can't remember the word, but I make it up. They said that black man is the president.
The man hasn't even watched a single episode of Coven, but he knows that clip. That is hilarious. Mm. Great job. And we had a really special friend. We have a very special friend, brother of the show, who had a birthday this weekend. I want to make sure we start off the week celebrating John Stringer and all his powerful magic that he sends out into the world. So that's just the quick update. I'm doing great. I'm having a wonderful time enjoying my life and had a wonderful weekend. So thank you for you and Yvette and everybody at Life Conversations Radio Network being a part of that, because you guys rock. Okay.
We rock and we roll.
Getting ready for
right.
Rio.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes,
I do have
yes.
an announcement if you're ready.
I think it's a good idea to go ahead and do it because I'm on fire. And so if I just need to drink some water to calm myself down because I don't want to break out into Alicia Keys. This boy's on fire. Okay. All right. Am I wrong for doing that? I don't care. Whatever your answer is. All right, do the announcements.
Okay, I'm still like tripping from that, but okay, yeah, I'm ready. Okay, here we go. Yes?
Whenever you're ready.
And here I am. Get out of the studio so I can do the announcements. Go make some tea or something. Hello, family.
Okay.
Welcome to the Ask. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the Ask Life Coach Today radio show. My name is Celeste Morgan, and I'll be keeping you informed of all the happenings going on with the Ask Life Coach Today radio show and LifeConversationsRadio.com. You can find the Metaphysical Rebel, a.k.a. Life Coach Today, right here from Monday through Wednesday, 12 until 2 p.m. Eastern. If you happen to miss him live, all the shows are archived. You can even subscribe on iTunes by entering Life Conversations. You don't have to go a day without Life Coach a Day. Call in with your questions, thoughts, and anything you're dealing with so Life Coach a Day can support you. The call-in number is 347-426-3346, and make sure to press 1 on your keypad. Now, if you can't call in, you can post your questions on the Ask Life Coach a Day fan like page. Just be sure to create a new posting because we really want to make sure that we get to you. Now, if you don't do or can't get on Facebook, go to LifeConversationsMedia.com. Hover on a Life Conversations radio menu. Then you will see a drop-down menu. Click on the Ask Life Coach a Day button and fill in the email. You can also join me around 1 for Celestial Moment with Celeste Morgan, where I offer the energy of the day. And if you have questions or thoughts for upcoming shows for Life Coach a Day, you can email them to ask@lifecoachaday.com. The theme for the month of March is Living a Balanced Life. And we also have exciting shows on Life Conversations Radio Network for you. Be sure to join Umbasa Safara for the play experience every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern. This week, our special guest will be Sherry Marie, the love goddess. Also, tune in to Ancestral Blueprints with Lisa Iverson and Life Coach Today on the last Wednesday of the month. And be sure to join me as well for the Celestial Show with Celeste Morgan every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern. For more info, go to LifeConversationsMedia.com. The Ask Life Coach Today radio show is syndicated on Within Radio every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern. For more info, go to InspireBroadcasting.com. And for breaking news, we are still having the Sounds of Soul with the Danny Feloce party on the Sounds of Soul page on Facebook. There will be a link that we will all click at 9 p.m. Eastern, and we get to party in the chat room. You can check out how we hung out last Saturday night if you go over there. You don't have to miss your soul train, but you can stay updated by checking out the like page on Facebook for more details or our personal walls to stay posted on Facebook. Now, that wraps up your announcements. Let's welcome back Life Coach Today.
Thank you, Celeste. I appreciate you. Let's start on in. Are we ready for Candice? I think we are, right?
Absolutely. I have her bio ready. I'm so excited to introduce her to the family. Candice Gorham. Yes, Candice Gorham is a licensed professional counselor. She is a researcher, teacher, and credentialed counselor who has worked with children, adolescents, and families for more than 10 years. A former evangelical minister, she holds a master's degree from Wake Forest University and is the founder of the Ebony Exodus Project. She is the author of The Ebony Exodus Project, Why Some Black Women Are Walking Out of Religions and Others Should, Too. She lives in Durham, North Carolina with her husband and daughter. Candice is on a journey of self-discovery and here to share her story, to know, really know, what life is all about. Family, please welcome our special guest to the Ask Life Coach Today radio show, Candice Gorham.
Yes, yes.
Hello.
Hey, Candice, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Very well. Thank you for being here. And you know what I heard in my head when Celeste was reading your bio? You leading folks and saying, "Let my people go."
That's good.
Yes. So let's jump in. I got a question that I asked all my guests, so I must ask you this question before we go deeper and talk about your journey and how you're breaking out and expanding and being more. Now, the first question I want to ask you is, even though we've heard your bio, but we want to hear from you from your perspective, who are you? Who is Candice Gorham?
Oh, man, gosh, I bet everybody responds to that like that's such a big question.
Too much.
I don't know. What she said at the beginning as far as being a researcher, being a therapist, you know, my professional life, of course, which is true for most people, is a huge part of my identity. But then, of course, you know, being a mother, being a wife, all of that I feel is part of who I am. I was actually, my husband and I were actually just talking maybe two or three nights ago about how sometimes you have sort of like this depersonalized experience where you sort of all of a sudden are looking at yourself like, who is that person? You know, how am I that person? And so I just kind of had one of those odd experiences a couple of days ago. Like, I don't know, who am I? That person sitting right there is so weird.
And why is she sitting next to me? Why is she so close to me? She even looks like
right.
me.
Exactly.
No, I hear you. I hear you. So let's jump into this conversation. The title of the show is The Journey of Christianity to Atheism. But the conversation is so much more than that because, you know, just reading from your book. So the first question I want to ask you, well, second question, but to really get this up front, are you an atheist?
I am, yes.
Okay, good. Because that's been a very good conversation behind the scenes. Now, let's talk about how you got to being an evangelist, an elder, speaking in tongues, going in people's house, talking about them, about the Lord, and they're smoking blunts. And, yeah, I know I should be going to church, but I don't. Hold on, you want some? And now you get to a point. And we'll talk about your definition of an atheist. So tell us your story. I know that from just the research that we've done, you got to a point where you just were asking deeper questions. And was it triggered by the depression?
I think it may have partially been triggered by depression. I think, a big part of my asking a whole lot of questions, you know, it did grow out of life troubles that I was having. I was going through foreclosure. I was so depressed. I was to the point of being suicidal. You know, there were just so many dynamics going on in my life. There was some, you know, extended family issues that were going on. It was a lot of things were kind of all happening at once. And I took that as a, sort of a personal sign that I must be doing something wrong. I'm experiencing so many problems in my life, but according to the Bible that I'm reading, according to, you know, the way that I've been taught by ministers, and according to my own belief about what I was hearing, you know, in prayer and stuff like that, according to all of that stuff, I was under the impression that I should be, you know, happy and healthy, you know, not necessarily that I had to be living in a mansion, but, you know, I should be stable and you know, feeling good about my life. And because I was not experiencing that level of satisfaction or that level of just stability, I felt like I must have been doing something wrong. And so it wasn't that I went to the Bible or I went to God angry and decided, I'm mad at God, I'm leaving. It was more like, what am I doing wrong, Lord? And, you know, studying and praying more and just going through these things of what I thought was would make me closer. And I felt like the more I studied, the more I sort of came across information that didn't line up with what I had previously thought, what I had been previously been told and previously believed. And rather than what I normally would have done when I was deep, deep into religion, I would have sort of pushed that stuff away and said, oh, that's contradictory to what I believe already, or that's contradictory to something that I read in the Bible. I can't even entertain that. And once I got to the point where I started saying, you know what, let me entertain this other information that doesn't agree with me. You know, that's a reasonable thing to do, I think. And so that was sort of what, you know, that was sort of where it all started from. And then, like, you know, and sort of opening yourself up to new ideas usually does, you know, in some ways change your worldview, you know. And I sort of went from being this really extreme evangelist to, you know, being more moderate, being like, okay, you know, I still believe in the Bible and still believe in Jesus, but it doesn't have to be that extreme. You know, and then from there, I sort of kept progressing a little bit more. Well, you know, maybe Jesus isn't necessarily the specific way, but, you know, there's still a God. I still believe that there's something bigger out there. And then, like I said, eventually I just sort of made my way to what I prefer to sort of focus it on, it being a naturalistic worldview. So this sort of belief that, you know, this natural world is what I need, is what I need to focus on, and the people in my lives, as opposed to sort of dedicating, you know, most of my life, every single day, most of my day to sort of worshiping this deity, you know.
So when you went, as you were going through that process, you in your book you talk about it was like 2 years. What was it like for you to go from Jesus is the answer to everything to, well, maybe not all the time, to I don't even know if I believe what I'm talking about, and to a point where you're now using the title, the label, as an atheist, and actually you're part of a movement of black women, and we'll talk more about that, but how did you navigate the journey in that 2 years and talking to your parents and your husbands, your friends? What was that like for you?
It was terrifying. Actually, I didn't really start to talk about it openly with friends and families until, you know, just a couple of years ago. I would say this deconversion process probably started in 2007. And it was scary. It was terrifying because, again, I was a biblical literalist. So, you know, I would be under a curse if I started entertaining some of those new ideas, or if I completely left the church, I might end up in hell. And so, you know, even though I was sort of pushing myself, keep studying, Candace, keep studying, you know, if this contradicts what you believe, so what? Keep studying. You know, keep trying to figure out what's how to reconcile that. And so it was scary. I would be terrified. I would have some, you know, some nights or some days where I couldn't rest. I was having nightmares and stuff because I was really, really upending, you know, years and years and years of indoctrination and belief. And so I think that, you know, that's one thing that I think most women that I've interviewed and most atheists and non-believers that I've talked to who were once believers, that what we call the deconversion process was really, really scary, actually. But like I said, I just became sort of a voracious reader. I was just so, you know, it so captivated me to start seeing and hearing information that I had never heard or never even fathomed as possibly true. You know, I started studying the history of the Bible. I started studying other religions. I started, you know, just sort of everything, just reading everything, watching debates, reading about philosophies, world philosophies. And so, like I said, it was an intense journey. It was exciting. It was fun. You know, I'm a bit of a nerd. I like to read and research. You know, obviously that's what I like to do. And so I was simultaneously just having a blast and just couldn't put it down, but also terrified and scared most of the time. So it was an interesting process.
Let me ask you about the scared. Let me ask you about the scared process. Were you scared that you might go to hell because you believed that and you've taught that? Or what were you scared of in particular?
Yeah, I believe that if I died today, that because I was entertaining these new ideas, there was a strong possibility that I would go to hell. And, of course, you know, that fear lessened over the course of that 2 years. But right in there, oh, yeah, I was terrified. And actually, I sort of started to ease my anxiety about hell because in the you might have read in the beginning of my book, when I was younger, I was a Jehovah's Witness. And so around this time that I started doing all this questioning and stuff, I made a really strong reconnection to my dad. You know, my parents separated when I was much younger, so, you know, I didn't really have always a close relationship with him. But at this time period that I'm talking about, 2007, 2008, I had really started getting close to him again, and he was still attending the Kingdom Hall. And because of that, you know, he would talk to me about the literature, or I'd read the Watchtower or the Awake magazine. And Jehovah's Witnesses do not believe in hell. They do believe that you can have an everlasting life, but if you don't make it to paradise, then you just, you know, you're just dead. You're not going to suffer forever.
Really?
And I
didn't know that. I thought they believed in hell. Okay.
You
just floating in the ether. Okay. Interesting.
And so I think that to a certain degree, that did help ease the anxiety early in the beginning because, like I said, I was trying to open my mind to the fact that everything that I've been taught may not be exactly right. And so to sort of come across another, you know, Christian sect, a Christian philosophy that did not teach about hell, and I really started studying, you know, the biblical scripture, the biblical history behind, you know, the various words in the Bible that I translated to hell. And, you know, I started studying, like getting really deep into it, and I thought, okay, well, maybe hell's not really that serious, or, you know, maybe. So that helped. That eased it. But it was still, I definitely still had anxiety for several years.
Now, invite us into your world and share with us what it was like telling your parents about your deconversion or your shift to saying, you know, I don't believe in what I used to believe in. What was that like?
In the beginning, like I said, as I was sort of going through that process, actually I wasn't really talking to people about it. At that time, I think part of what helped facilitate that process was that in 2008, I moved to Bermuda. So my husband and I had moved there, and we were teaching and stuff. So I'm in a whole other country now. I don't have daily access to my friends and family. So sort of having that
smart move,
you know, sort of having that isolation and not being there every single day to have people, you know, asking me to church or, you know, just in general, being in black families, God comes up all the time. So being in that position helped me to sort of not have to deal with that pressure and that anxiety. I think that had I been right there with friends and family and discussing the process with them the whole way, I probably would have been convinced to, you know, get over it, stop, you know, girl, you better stop entertaining those ideas, you know. So being away helped. And I like I said, I haven't really directly discussed it with many people. My mom and my dad in the beginning, you know, I stopped going to church. They noticed that, you know, obviously I wasn't ministering anymore. And so they kind of started to, you know, wonder what's going on. And I explained to them, I'm going through this process, you know, I'm overwhelmed, I'm frustrated by what I'm being taught, I'm frustrated by how miserable I am, so, you know, I'm starting to maybe take a break from church. And so they were, okay, you know, well, you still believe in God, right? Yeah, oh, you know, yeah. And, I mean, of course, at that time I did, you know.
Right.
And like I said, so after a while they knew that I didn't really care to go to church anymore, and they knew that I was not a biblical literalist anymore, that I started to sort of feel like, oh, that's kind of flexible. And but my mom actually didn't know that I used the word atheist actually until this year. Now, mind you, I gave her a copy of my book when it came out in the fall.
What was that like?
I was really nervous. I was actually very nervous and terrified to give her the book because when I was still writing the book, I gave her a couple of chapters and said, you know, asked her, you know, I invited her to read them and see what she thought and had to say. And one of the stories in the book, the very first personal interview, is very, very raw. I mean, the woman curses a lot, and, you know, she really put it out there about her anxiety.
Oh, my Jesus Christ.
You read it?
Yes. Yes. Bree was off the chain. She was hurting my head. Well, go ahead.
So, well, yeah, just like how you reacted, my mom was like, I could not get past, like, page 3 of this girl's story, so she kind of got stuck at that. And mm-hmm. so even when I gave her the published book, you know, she was all, oh, my God, I'm so happy, I'm so proud. But, you know, every few days I'd be like, yeah, have you read my book? Oh, I started it. Have you read my book? Oh, I started it. And it actually ended up being her sister, who lives in another state now, who called her to say, I read online that Candace calls herself an atheist. And so my mom called me and was like, what is this that my sister is talking about? And so that was the first time that I really, and like I said, now that was, it was either this year or maybe December, something like that, was the first time mm-hmm. that I actually said to my mama, yes, Mom, I'm an atheist. And it actually mm-hmm. went very well. Like, she was very calm, and she was like, well, explain to me what you believe, explain to me what you don't believe. You know, and she was just like, well, you know what, you have the courage of your conviction. You know, even though I don't necessarily agree with it, I'm proud of you for, you know, having the courage of your conviction and taking the steps to, you know, you're not, in your book, you're not just railing against God, you're researching and you're sharing other people's stories. So it was very pleasant with her, actually. And like with my dad.
Let me pull it up to Phil here. How did it make you feel when your mother said that to you?
You know what? I wanted to cry. I got off the phone with her, and I told my husband, I was like, oh, my gosh, this was like the greatest conversation ever. You know, so, I mean, it was relieving to actually be able to use that word directly with her because, you know, I don't use that word with a lot of people. Even my best friend, I've never actually said to her, yes, I'm an atheist. And she knows I'm an atheist, and she has called me an atheist before. She said, I know you're supposed to be an atheist, da-da-da-da-da. But like I said, I'm very, even after this, I, you know, my name and my book and my interviews are out there, the world knows. But I'm very nervous about actually using that word with friends and family. And this is me, you know, I have a book out, but yet I still struggle with using that word.
And that's what's beautiful about your process, you know, because for me, I feel like you're showing the human condition. I believe that there are people who say they believe in God. I don't really believe in God, but hopefully I'm supposed to. So for me, your journey is just part of the human experience. It really wasn't a big deal about, you know, what label you use or don't use, because we're all on this journey of life trying to figure it out. Now, you were going to talk about your experience with telling your dad, or maybe, I don't know if you used the word, the title, atheist with me. What was that like with your father?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, like I said, I never used the word atheist, and after a few years while I was in Bermuda, he kind of stopped going to the – or no, actually, right before I moved to Bermuda, he really sort of fell out of going to the Kingdom Hall himself. And, he was having some problems within the hall, and so he just sort of, you know, fell off. And he so we both were sort of in this place at the same time of, well, maybe it's not really that serious. And before he moved to Bermuda, he was actually living with me. So we were, you know, talking more about it on a regular basis. And so we both sort of were in this area of, yeah, God is real, Jesus is real, but maybe the specifics of how all these churches or kingdom halls or whatever, the specifics may not necessarily be accurate. So he knew I was there, but it was several years later when somebody else told him that I was an atheist. And he confronted me about it. I mean, not a bad confrontation. It was good. And he was like, look, I want to talk to you. So-and-so told me that you're supposed to be an atheist. And I kid you not, this was, like I said, this was maybe three or four years ago. I was like, what? No. No. Who told you that?
You liar. You liar.
I was scared. I was terrified to use the term. And I was like, what?
Wow.
No. And then he told me who said it. And I went and confronted that person, and I was crying. And I was like, you well, know that nobody knows. I can't believe that you outed me like this, you know. And so to this day, I've never used the word with my dad. Like I said, he knows that I am now not interested in church. I'm not interested in, you know, studying that stuff anymore. So he knows that there's a certain level of, like, just completely not interested for me. But I don't think that he knows that I would go so far as to say I don't believe in a God. He probably thinks I stopped just short of that line.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about this atheist thing in the God. And before we go deeper and talking about the Exodus, the Ebony Exodus, and listeners, if you're joining us, my guest is Candace Gorham. Her website address is ebonyexodus.com. She is the author of The Ebony Exodus Project, Why Some Black Women Are Walking Out of Religion and Others Should Too. Ron, take your purse. Actually, matter of fact, leave your purse. No, she didn't add that in there. I might add that. But anyway, if you have any questions or comments, the number is 347-426-3346, 347-426-3346. And you can post your questions, comments, thoughts, doubts, worries, fears on the Ask Life Coach at a Radio Show page. Ask Life Coach at a Radio Show page or the Life Conversations radio page. This is the House of Love. We are here to support you on your transformation journey. Now, what is your definition? Actually, before I do that, well, I guess it would help. I want to ask, I'm going to make it a two-part question, actually. What is your definition of an atheist, and why do you still find it hard, difficult, challenging to say out of your mouth that you are one? So you can answer whichever one you want to answer first.
Okay. Well, I think in general, in the sort of non-believing community, most people, in my experience, agree that there's sort of two definitions for atheism. And one prominent non-believer that I know of, he explains it as there's atheist that it has a capital letter that says specifically, you know, I don't think that there's a God and I don't believe that there's a God. And then there's the lowercase atheist, which is sort of like, is sort of the reverse of saying that I don't have a belief in a God. So it's sort of like the lowercase atheist, it's almost like agnostic atheist, where you're saying I don't know and therefore I don't believe, you know, but you're still kind of leaving the door open there. I don't know, there might be, but I don't have any evidence for it, so I don't believe. Whereas the other side, you know, a person would more proactively say, there is no evidence, therefore there is no God. But, I think the general term that most people explain it as is the lack of a belief. So, again, there's that sort of agnostic piece to that that says we don't have the knowledge either. So, therefore, I lack any belief. I don't have any belief. So I call myself just a plain atheist, but in my mind I think agnostic atheist, because of course agnostic means without knowledge. So it's sort of like saying I don't believe that there has been any concrete evidence that there is a supernatural entity. Therefore, I choose not to believe in anything in particular.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to ask, when you say, well, there haven't been any concrete evidence, so is that sort of, when you said leaving the door open, is that a sort of mindset where you're saying, until I see one, then maybe I'll change my point of view?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think every atheist that I've ever known agrees that if there's, you know, if you were to see some concrete evidence that there was a supernatural entity somewhere, you know, I don't have a choice but to believe that it's real. Now, of course, you can choose whether or not you're going to worship it, whether or not you're going to serve it. But, I don't think that anyone would completely deny concrete evidence, you know. So if there was one, okay, great, I'm no longer an atheist because I do now believe that there's one. But then, like I said, you still have the option of are you going to worship it or not. You know, that's a whole separate question. And a lot of people do get into a sort of a morality issue about at least, especially the God of the Bible anyway. There's been a lot of discussion mm-hmm. about whether or not that God of the Bible is even worthy to be worshipped. So yeah, that's sort of where I am with that. If there was evidence, then yeah, of course I wouldn't have a choice but to acknowledge it.
What, let me ask you this. What would you consider a concrete evidence? What would you want to see to say, oh, shoot, yeah, there mm-hmm. is a God?
Mm-hmm. Concrete evidence, of course, would be something like, you know, a popular one that I hear is, you know, God raised somebody from the dead, or somebody, okay. an amputee had his leg regrown. You know, some of the sort mm-hmm. of... Some of the miracles that we saw, that we see in the Bible, that Jesus did or that God did in the Old Testament,
mm-hmm.
you know, there were some real concrete, obvious miracles, you know, that were undeniable, mm-hmm. that, you know, supposedly, at least according to the Bible, were undeniable, you know.
Right.
And so if we saw that level of undeniable miracle, I think that's what would make most people say, okay, fine, I will believe again.
So why is it still challenging for you to say that you're an atheist? I think you clarified the kind of atheist you are. You're sort of like an agnostic atheist. So why is it still challenging for you to say it out of your mouth, even though you've written books and doing talks all over the place?
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, there was a time that I was just uncomfortable saying it, period. You know, like even in my own mm-hmm. home with my husband. Even though, you know, mm-hmm. we're both sort of on the same page with everything. So now I'm more, you know, I'm better at just sort of saying it, you know, on a radio like this, or, you know, at a speaking engagement or something. But
mm-hmm.
but with my family and friends, I think because of, you know, just the negative connotation that it has. You know, a lot of people in our society think atheist means that you worship the devil. You know, a lot of people, it's scary to people. A lot of people think that an atheist, it has some sort of a demonic presence, you know, that like, oh, that's the devil. I don't want to get close to you. You might. And so, you know, a lot of people lose relationships. I've definitely lost a couple of friends over the years because, you know, once they realized that I was an atheist, that was too scary for them. You know, if I stop mm-hmm. short of using the term atheist, I think most people can sort of deal with that. If you say, like, I don't worship anything, I don't go to church, you know, I think you could even almost say I don't believe in anything. I think you can get all the way to that line, and most people would deal with that. But then when you cross
right.
it and say atheist, that's a hard line for so many people, and they just can't go there with you.
Oh, that is funny on so many levels. You could say you are, I don't believe in God, I need concrete evidence. You know, right now, I don't do that God thing, but don't you ever say you're an atheist, because then, you know, mess up, sister. You shouldn't have said that. That is
exactly.
just funny.
Exactly. And it's scary, because, I mean, I know when I was that sort of an evangelical, biblical literalist, you know, I would have been afraid, too, if somebody said, no, I'm an atheist. I would have felt like I got to distance myself. You know, that's a potential demonic influence on my life. I can't have that in my life. So I can understand why a lot of people are afraid of it, because I was afraid of it.
I hear you. Okay, so I want to ask you this other question about God. What was your definition of God before, and what is it now?
Mm-hmm. I guess, let me see. My definition of God is, again, I'm, you know, being a biblical literalist, I'm thinking this all-knowing, all-powerful, all-present God that, or, you know, spiritual being that was supreme, that created the universe, that created mankind, that created the animals. You know, I didn't believe in evolution. I believe that that God was the one that created all this life and diversity from scratch, you know, on day one in that six, you know, in that first week of creation. And I believe that he, you know, that's what he was. You know, he was this supreme. He was everything, and he created everything, and he was everywhere. And his son was Jesus. You know, I believe in the specific story of the Bible that the mm-hmm. God, you know, Jehovah, Yahweh, you know, his son was Jesus, who's also a version of him, you know, with the whole Trinity doctrine. He was manifested in the Holy Spirit. So all of that, like I say, whatever the lessons are in the Bible, again, I was a biblical literalist, so that's what I believe. Today, I don't.
So you saw God then as a man up in the cloud somewhere with the Book of Judgment in his hands, like some man just taking notes of what's going on in people's world, right?
Correct. He was a thing, an entity that had the ability to be everywhere, but he was a one thing by himself also.
Okay.
But now I wouldn't use the term God for anything. Now, I do sort of have this belief that there's some stuff in the universe or in the world, you know, there's some connection between humans that we have yet to explain. But I believe that with science and scientific advancements and stuff, I think that it's possible that some of that stuff may be explained someday. It's like we know what sort of chemicals and hormones intensify feelings of love between people. That's not to downgrade love to nothing but a chemical reaction in the brain, but there's a level of real scientific evidence that we can offer that says, yeah, there is some, you know, there is some stuff that's going on that creates feelings of love. So I wouldn't say a God, but I do also acknowledge that there are things that exist in this world and in our relationships and in our interactions that haven't been explained yet. And so I just choose not to, one man, I think is Richard Dawkins, talks about the God of the gap. So this sort of concept that just because we can't explain it, there's this gap of information, that's where we insert, therefore it must be God. And so I shy away from that. I acknowledge that there are gaps in our information and that there are things that we can't explain, but I don't automatically insert God. So I wouldn't use that term for much of anything. I can see the value of it, but because of its connotation in our society, you know, people are unable, you know, some people might talk about, well, my inner voice, I call that my God. I do believe in intuition and inner voice and stuff like that, but again, I wouldn't call that God, specifically because the term God has been, you know, there's no consensus about what that term means, and therefore a lot of people interpret it one certain way.
Right. We got a caller, we're getting ready to take a break. I guess we're going to take a call. Take call right now because I want to talk about the Bible Lilith. That's hearing it and elections, and that's the first time I'm hearing it. So let's take the call. I'm being told to take the call because we need to take the call. Okay, let's go to Yvette. Hey Yvette, how are you?
Greetings. How are you?
Very well.
Good.
So what's your question
for
Candace?
Hi Candace. I wanted to know, in hard times, you know, most people fall back on their religion or a higher power. In hard times, who do you fall back on, and what do you do in hard times?
Again, I am a licensed professional counselor, so I fall back on the same sorts of skills that I would tell my clients. You know, if you're stressed, what are the stress management strategies you can use? If you're fearful or you're having some issues, you know, what are those cognitive distortions? If it's a specific cognitive distortion, how do we combat that? So I sort of would walk myself through the same sorts of mental health practices that I would suggest to anybody else. And then, you know, falling back on friends and family. You know, again, I'm also what you would call a humanist. So I believe that, you know, humanity has the ability to support each other and take care of each other. And so that's where I sort of fall back.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Yvette. Yes, you are listening to the Ask Life Coach at Any Radio Show. The number is 347-426-3346. 347-426-3346. Make sure you press 1 on your keypad. My guest is Candace Gorham. She's a counselor. She's the author of the Ebony Exodus Project. why some black women are walking out on religion and others should too. We're going to talk more about that on the other side, what's happening, her point of view, her experience of the black church, and how she is calling out to black church to say, listen, I got to take some responsibility for things that ain't going right. If you want to take responsibility for the good things, we must look at the things that are not working. So, Candace, we're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation, okay?
Okay.
All right. You are listening to the Ask Life Coach at a radio show. And check out Candace's website. It is ebonyexodus.com. Let my people go. I couldn't resist. I'm sorry. Wow. To be quite honest, what I'm hearing Candace say doesn't make me go, oh, my God, really? The truth is you got to know what you know. It doesn't matter if you're religious, spiritual, whatever you believe in. If you believe in something that's not really holding you up, I mean, there's some people that believe in God. Oh, my God, they will pull God out. Oh, my God, oh, my God. But they're going through hell believing in God. There are people who don't believe in God that are going through hell. There are people who don't believe in God and feeling like in heaven. So it's all a matter of consciousness, and I believe we are here to ask the deeper questions and not just sit with the information that's been passed down to us. Many people, a lot of people that I know in a spiritual path, had a religious background, and they challenge the things that they were taught. What's interesting, as Candace was sharing with us, the idea of, you can talk about, she was saying, talking about not believing God, I don't think God exists, blah, 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 but don't you ever use that word, atheist. And it's the same thing as God. You can be having a good time with somebody and you bring God into it, like, hey, wait a minute, I don't do that God conversation. Humans, we are so creatively jacked up. It's time to take a break. Let me bring on Celeste Morgan for the announcement, and then we're going to come back with Celestial Moment and then continue the conversation, talk more about the Exodus, Ebony Exodus Project. Hey, Celeste. Celeste. Wrong one. It's not her fault. It's my fault. It's my fault. My bad, Shelby. All right, there you are.
That's cool. I'm right here. I'm like, wow, what amazing conversation. I really could have used Candace at Trinity University, which is an all-women's college. It's a Catholic institution. No, I'm not Catholic, but I got so much out of that single-sex institution as for knowledge. And there were some unlikely places and books that I've come across that I'm sure Candace has come across in her life. There's a book about black women and struggling and suffering. There was an article called Power from the Periphery and how to really balance your power from the periphery within the black church, because there were just some things that you couldn't agree with. And so I've been reading these documents about women negotiating. So to hear Candace in our Women's History Month break down her experience takes it to a whole other level of moving toward wholeness. So I really applaud her story and thank her for sharing right now. I just had to get my 2 cents in. My goodness. Amazing work. Feminist epistemologies changed my life. I can't spell it, but I can say it. All right, moving on. Let me get you a day. There are some phenomenal things happening in Atlanta. So for all your listeners in Atlanta, I want to give them a hot tip. For those of us not in Atlanta, maybe we should aspire to take a trip. Let me let you know what's going on, okay? The healing continues. There's an amazing opportunity coming up that we want to make sure you're aware of. It's Wellness Through Healthy Living at Hillside International Truth Center on Saturday, April 5th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. You get to find out how to love your body to life. And there's going to be amazing workshops going on around energetic healing. There's going to be testing, HIV/AIDS testing. There'll be vegan eating and cooking. And I get all excited when you start talking about reflexology and Reiki and Tai Chi and Qigong and African drumming therapy. Fitness for Grown Folks Caregiving. And, hey, don't you need some information on the Affordable Care Act? You can get all that, free health screenings, free samples. Enjoy yourself in a community of people who love you and support you at the Wellness Through Healthy Living Health Fair, sponsored by Hillside, on Saturday, April 5th from 10 to 3 p.m. For more information, you can call 404-758-6811, or you can go to hillsideinternational.org. Great things going down in Atlanta, and we also have some amazing shows coming up for you. I know you are enjoying the empowering Exodus journey that Candace is sharing with us right now. And we've got more amazing shows coming up for you. George Washington Carver once said that anything will give up its secrets if you love it enough. And in celebration of the spring equinox, we have a guest who has a special relationship to nature and animals. Join Noelle Mead Izzy tomorrow and hear her story of the secret medicine of nature for living a balanced life. She is the author of The Hummingbird That Answered My Heart's Calling. Then you want to make sure you hang out for Life Coach Today, who's going to be flying solo this Wednesday to offer you some soul food for your consciousness. Make sure you're in the house for Is Your Spiritual Quest Taking You on a Wild Goose Chase? Remember Duck, Duck, Goose? Which one are you? So make sure you don't miss these powerful shows, because when you tune in, you get to be the change you want to see.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Hello, this is motivational speaker Les Brown, and you're listening to Life Conversations. It's going to change your life.
Life Conversations, the radio show, is dedicated to empowering its listeners spiritually, emotionally, socially, and financially. The radio show provides the platform for the stimulation of thoughts, conversations, and ways of being that allow listeners to explore and examine what it is they believe and decide whether what they believe is keeping them stuck and disempowered or empowering them to live their best life.
Hi, this is Mark Hussin, founder of 12radio.com, and I'm here to support Life Coach Ade. I like what Life Coach Ade does. I like the Celestial Moment with Celeste Morgan, and I like the message that's given out. If you like the message and you have a product that you'd like to also announce that would reach like-minded people, consider sponsoring the show. The pricing is great, and details will be given after this message. Keep spreading the love, guys. Thank you so much.
Yes, indeed. For more information, send an email to radio@lifeconversationsradio.com. That's radio@lifeconversationsradio.com.
Are you about work, 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 and no play? Adults have a tendency to stay busy and neglect their own health and well-being, while successful people take regular breaks, vacations, and timeouts to play, rest, rejuvenate, and tap into their creative selves. Play and Heal is a unique opportunity for you to host a life-changing event in your very own living room, an event that is especially designed by you to facilitate the releasing of stress, balancing the mind, body, and spirit, not only for yourself, but of your friends and family too. Whether you create a soiree, a ladies' night, or couples event, these events are infused with the best of care, informative health information, and tools for stress maintenance that will shift how you see yourself and empower you to begin to work in cooperation with your best life. This event is sure to put a smile on your heart and send your spirit soaring. To book your Play and Heal event today, go to playandheal.org, or you can email us at info@playandheal.org.
Snickerdoodle, shortbread, fudgy nut bar. How many treats? Snickerdoodle, shortbread, fudgy nut bar. How many treats in the cookie jar? One.
Dad, you're supposed to jump over the rope.
One more time.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that color therapy has been used for thousands of years? But many of us don't realize that we've actually been practicing some form of color therapy our entire lives. We choose the colors we wear, the colors we eat, our furnishings, and wall colors. And whether you're selecting a color for your next car or toothbrush, all of your color choices are meant to make you feel better. I'm Elaine Marie, the director of Aura House School of Color and Light, and the founder of Color Therapy Month. This March, please join me in celebrating the healing power of color. For ideas on how you can participate in this worldwide event, visit our website at colortherapymonth.com.
Life Conversations, committed to assisting you move from where you are to where you want to be. Have courage, make that move.
Hi, this is Jack Armstrong, author of Lessons from the Source. You're listening to Ask Life Coach Ade on LifeConversationsRadio.com. Many blessings to you.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
That is a statement, a truth that will change your life. If you embody it, be the change you want to see. It is about taking responsibility for who and what you are, taking responsibility for your health and well-being. We are all on a journey. We're all on a journey. And I'm going to give someone a side eye while I make this statement. Be careful who you judge, because you become that you judge. And if you don't, what is it? You spot it, you got it. We are all on a journey. And what if you find out that everything you believed about yourself is a lie? How do you know what you know? And that's what today's conversation is about. The theme for the month on the show is living a balanced life. Living a balanced life. And to live a balanced life, you must be able to back up what you believe. Can you stand on your own truth? How do you know if you're standing for your own truth? You won't have to defend it. If you have to defend your truth, if you have to fight for your own truth, I don't think you believe it. Well, sit with that for a minute. It's time for Celestial Moment, and then we're going to continue the conversation with Candace Gorham, author of the Ebony Exodus Project. There you go. Hey, Celeste, welcome back. Celestial Moment with Celeste Morgan. Time is now.
And I am ready.
Okay.
Good afternoon,
right, good.
Family. I am Celeste Morgan, and it is my pleasure to bring you Celestial Moments. Numbers give us information to help us navigate and embrace all that's showing up in our life right now. I come bearing a number gift. The energy of the day equals 9. And 9 is the number ruled by Mars. It's the end of the cycle. 9 is also the Hermit in Tarot, the way shower lights our path in the dark. And it's the sacred number of Oya, an African goddess of change, lightning. She is a warrior. She destroys what you no longer need. You are finally prepared for transformation, which is the gift the butterfly brings your way. Its number is also 9 of the medicine cards. Who truly knows what it takes for a caterpillar to stop crawling and go into a cocoon? When we heed the lesson, we learn how to fly. And for a special treat, I would like to offer you a gift in celebration of the national holiday for the Irish, St. Patrick's Day. According to the Celtic tree astrology, if you're having a birthday today, then you would be an ash tree. It's called the Enchantress. It's the last day for this tree, actually. So I invite you into the woods of your heart to release your fears. With the full moon and Virgo energy still running, what are you willing to lose to experience the gifts of enchantment? The ending is truly a beginning, and that's the story of 9 and a gift for St. Patrick's Day. All is well. I'll see you on Tuesday around 1 for another Celestial Moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Celeste. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And we'll bring you back on for some questions, emailed questions.
Gotcha.
You are listening to the Ask Life Coach at a Radio Show. That was a Celestial Moment with Celeste Morgan. She'll be back tomorrow around 1. And now let's get back to my guest. But before I do that, let me let you know this is Destiny Muhammad underneath me. Stop it. You know what I mean. Destiny Muhammad Harpist from the Hood. Harpist from the Hood. And her website address is destinymuhammad.com. It's time to continue the conversation. I got questions, and if you do too, the number is 347-426-3346. 347-426-3346. Make sure you press 1. And if you've got questions, if you're pissed by what you're hearing, we will take your questions, but you have to cut the attitude. We ain't trying to deal with attitude because, okay, I won't say that. I'm messing with somebody. Candace, welcome back.
Hey, I'm here.
Oh, wow. Yes, thank you for showing up. Thank you for saying yes to life. Now, before the break, I was talking about, you had mentioned Bible literalist, and someone else in the chat room, Electra, said that's the first time she's hearing it. That's the first time I heard it. And the question that comes up for me when you say you were a Bible literalist, the question that come up for me is, how did you take everything in the Bible so literal without actually going crazy? Because there's so much contradiction in it and the Bible if you take it literally.
That's the question of the century, isn't it? No. It's just blind faith. You know, blind faith. Mm. You sort of take it that maybe there's some mystery there that God has yet to reveal, or maybe you say, you know what, there was a translation error, you know, and now we have 50,000 different translations of the Bible, so if something didn't make sense, you know, you could almost certainly find somebody somewhere who's written a book that explained away that contradiction. You know, either they say, no, this word wasn't translated correctly, or it's taken out of context or something. And so I sort of call them mental gymnastics. You know, you sort of have to flip and turn and twist your body in all kinds of weird ways to make it fit, you know, twist your mind, you know. And like I said, so if it was contradictory or it didn't make sense, I just sort of had faith that God would, you know, one day reveal to me how to make it make sense. Mm.
Okay, I want to talk about the Exodus project and the process, the shift that is happening out there. In your book, you have different labels. But I have a question for you. There's somebody who has a question, but she is so hot, she's just so mad, as if you're taking a religion from her, she can't call in. So she said, let me see if I can find the answer. I got an instant message here. She's humans, we are funny. She said, where is it? I know it. I'll paraphrase. She said, so when you achieve something, who do you praise? Do you praise nobody? Who do you praise when something great happens for you? Don't you praise God? Don't you have a need to praise? I mean, lady, come on now.
You know,
so who do you praise? Go ahead.
I feel like that's one of the problems that we as black women especially have is that we don't take credit for anything good that we do. And I talk about that in the Bible about how, you know, how I feel like it can negatively impact your personal self-esteem and well-being if you're constantly saying, I'm a wretch, you know, save a wretch like me, and nothing good that happens in my life had anything to do with me. It all had to do with God. So that's how, again, that's sort of the flip side of that is that God only gives me good things, so when bad things happen to it, whose fault is it? It's my fault. So then I end up stuck in, not only don't I get to take credit for anything good that I do, I also have to now beat myself up because I did something wrong as well. But I give the credit to myself, my skills, and I give the credit to my friends and family and professors and supervisors, you know, all the people who have nurtured me and, you know, my parents who've helped me get to this place. You know, I got a master's degree. Okay, you know, there's 1,000 people that I can name and pinpoint if it hadn't been for this person doing that, If it hadn't been for this person saying that, I would have never put in the application. I would have, you know, so I like to look back at the real people that are in the situations that I can pinpoint and I can see where the credit belongs now. So I feel like I don't need to go any further than that. I can praise and thank the people who are right here every day who are helping me every day.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. Okay, so let's talk about this movement and why black people are leaving, black women particularly, because that's the focus of your book, are leaving religion, and why others should as well. I just want to defend, it's like, you know, we didn't go into details about, from the research where you were depressed, but they kept telling you, read scripture, pray more, that's the devil, don't believe in that, all that other stuff. But tell us what's happening and why should black women to really question some of the things that they are being taught or what they're reading in the Bible to really know for themselves?
Well, like I said, sort of to piggyback on what I was just saying, that, again, depending on how, you know, and what I say in the book doesn't, I understand that doesn't apply to everybody, but a lot of people end up in situations where, again, you know, they're being a biblical literalist sort of puts you in a position that, you know, you kind of have to discount your own positives, discount the good things that you do for yourself. And I think people end up in a situation that they're dedicating so much of their lives and their minds and their energy to church that they're not taking the chance to go back and take care of themselves. And one of the distinctions that I try to make in the book is I did not put as much emphasis on, you know, belief in God. Now, of course, in the interviews that comes up, and I let them explore that, but in my chapters and in all, you know, in what I was contributing to the book, I was not so much talking about God and whether or not a person believes in God. I was more talking about the actual entity of the church, you know, the physical building that you go to and the physical men and women who are teaching you. Is what they're saying and doing and teaching you, is it helping? Now, whether or not you want to believe in God or not, I feel like we need to explore, because the black church has so much power and influence and authority in black lives every day. Even the person who's not that religious, you know, in the black community, you just can't get away from people talking about God and praising God and reminding you to praise God. So, like I said, I'm actually focusing more on the entity itself and having it and saying, let's ask ourselves, we're dedicating so much of our lives and time and energy to an entity and to people, to men and women, that is that really helping us? You know, is it? And what is the reason that you do that? That's been sort of the connection where I put to the Bible. The reason that you're contributing so much of your time and life to these people is because you believe in so much of what the Bible says. And so then that's sort of how you go down a spiritual path of, you know, is that true? But like I said, the book itself I focus more on the church itself and not so much on the spiritual side.
Right. And it also speaks to really a care for humanity, care for humans, for women, because in your book you write about when people ask you, why did you start the Ebony Exodus Project? And your response is always, black women are the single most religious demographic in the United States, yet they are at the bottom of the totem pole in practically every measure of quality of life, physical health, financial health, mental health, and more. Can you talk more about that?
Well, again, if you go through, you know, as you go through the book, black women, we have some of the highest rates of depression, but there's not a whole lot of research on how to address that. You know, of course, we talk about being, you know, providing culturally competent, you know, mental health services. So even though it's recognized that black women have all of these risk factors for increased depression, you know, we have low socioeconomic status. We have, you know, all of the various risk factors that contribute to us having really high rates of depression. But there's not a whole lot of research on how to deal with that. There are some charts in the book that break down the rates of STDs, gonorrhea, syphilis, and chlamydia. And we are more than 25 times more likely to, or not more likely, at this moment, black women represent have 25 times the rates of, I think it's chlamydia, or one of the first ones, than, for example, white men. 20 times more than white women. You know, it's like when you look at the numbers, it's 85 per 100,000 white men, maybe 150 per 100,000 for white women. And then it's over 2,000 cases per 100,000 for black women. 80, almost 85% of all of black women are overweight or obese or something. And so we have, I think, the number third cause of death for all black men and women, the third leading cause of death for all black men and women sort of in that mid-30s to mid-40s range, third leading cause is HIV/AIDS. You know, that's the age where we're establishing our families, we're establishing our careers, we should be settling down, but it's the third leading cause of death. The first leading cause of death for black women is, you know, cardiovascular-related diseases. So, again, here we are with so many disproportionately more troubles than most other demographics besides black men and prison rates. You know, pretty much our rates for everything are astronomically more than all other demographics. But we're the most religious demographic. So that is a huge disconnect if you're a huge population of African-American women are biblical literalists to some degree. That's a huge disparity. And somebody needs to look at that and call that out and say, what in the world? This does not go together.
So if you were sitting with a group of leaders of churches and you're sharing with them the statistics of things that you found out and things that you're thinking, come on, if you represent this group and all of this mental health issues, things that you're not addressing, what would you say to them?
I would say, I can't use profanity, can I? I would say you need to get up. I would say you need to get up off of your butt. Let me say that. It wouldn't be too attacking or offensive. I wouldn't attack anybody, but you need to get up and look at this and take this seriously. You know, on Sunday, preach about something besides abstinence or sin and hell and talk to us, provide some education in the church about healthful practices, sponsor some healthful activities as a church, offer some support groups that have professional mental health angle to them and not just a spiritual mental health angle, provide some evidence-based practice assistance to your congregation. I'm not saying that everybody should, I do say everybody should walk out on religion, but what I mean bigger than that is, question why you believe what you believe and then figure out what adjustments do you need to make. And like I said, I think the churches just have dropped the ball on, of taking care of the black community like supposedly the black church is fond of saying, oh, we're the foundation of the black community, and if it wasn't for us, the black community would fall apart. Well, the black community is already falling apart. we're still scraping to get ourselves together, after slavery and after civil rights and stuff. And we're still dealing with, racism and all of that stuff. So to me, the black church can't continue to say the community will fall apart without us. You need to get out there and start fixing stuff now because it's already falling apart. So that's what I would say to them. Do some practical stuff. Don't just give lectures every Sunday. Do some stuff, that will actually produce tangible change tomorrow,
Right. And you're talking from experience. When you, as I said earlier, you're going through your depression phase, you were told to read the Bible more, pray more. It wasn't taken seriously, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Okay, I think it's time to take some questions. We've got some emailed questions here. Celeste, which one is it? Right here. All right, Celeste, you got some questions from Candace, and then we're going to take a call after this one.
Okay,
Celeste, are you there?
Great. Yeah, I'm right here, Dave. Can you hear me? She kind of answered it in her answer. I was like, wow, this woman. I'm so glad she said she believed in her intuition because that really came through. But you know what? Mm-hmm. I'm still going to honor the question and put it out there. Maybe there's something else that didn't come out. All right. Mm-hmm. This is from Mary. What is Candace's opinion about the state of women right now, and how has the church supported or limited their roles, and what can we as women do better to support ourselves?
Say the first part of it again.
What is Candace's opinion about the state of women right now?
The opinion of the state. Well, I call that my mantra that he just read earlier, which is the single most religious demographic. Yeah, I feel like the state of black women, it's pretty bad. You know, as we get more higher education, as we, you know, sort of the world expands, and you know, with the internet, you know, all of a sudden we live in a bigger world besides just our one zip code. You know, I feel like as that happens, the lives of women, it is improving, you know, but it's improving very slowly. And so right now, I feel like we're still struggling with, like I said, just basic needs. You know, we live in broken homes, and we're the strong matriarchs who are having to carry the weight of the world on our shoulders and not allowed to take care of ourselves, not allowed to, you know, if you break down and you're depressed and you're crying, oh, girl, you're a strong black woman. You can do it. And I feel like sometimes I don't want to be a strong black woman. I want somebody to take care of me, you know. And I feel like that's the state. But the state is that there's so much pressure, and there's very few other people who will be able to then step in and help us, because every black woman has so much stress. So which one can you go to help? You know, black women are disproportionately in prison. You know, they're disproportionately not part of the home. So who's going to help us with the parenting? You know, I feel like there's just so much stress and pressure against us that it's a struggle to get out of that. Mm-hmm. There was a third part, I think, that you asked. I can't remember.
Okay, let me bring Celeste back on. Celeste, a third part of the question?
Celeste? Yeah, the third part is, Candace, how do you suggest that we as women take better care of ourselves?
Okay, how do we do it? I think we have to take charge. We have to realize that all of the answers to our issues are not going to be answered on Sunday morning or Wednesday afternoon or the Thursday choir rehearsal. I feel like the answers aren't there. We have to be ready and strong enough to and I hate to say strong enough, because, of course, that's not to imply that women who are still in church are weak or anything. I wouldn't dare imply that. But, you know, taking the steps to educate ourselves about different worldviews, taking the time to educate ourselves about, you know, about diet and exercising even. You know, diet and exercising by itself has the power to do so much for us, even if we still want to, you know, work crazy hours and dedicate all of our time to the church. And it's like, you know, taking the time to sort of engage in those conversations and actually implementing some of the changes. You know, we just sort of have to be proactive, and we just going to have to step up and say, you know, nobody else is going to do my self-care, the stuff that I need to do to take care of myself, because I'm the one doing everything for everybody else. So I have to step up and just do it, you know.
So it's really you're asking people, encouraging people to be responsible for their health and well-being, put that in the hands of the church, and hopefully the church or whoever will help them be healthy and whole. That's what I hear.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes. And I want to say ask for help, you know, reach out to others, but part of the problem is that, again, over 85% of black women are in church, so a lot of times when women try to reach out and say, look, I'm having an issue, and, you know, maybe I don't necessarily want to deal with this through the church. You know, I don't necessarily want to get Christian counseling. I want real counseling. You're discouraged from that. So I want to say reach out for support, but then I also recognize that it's going to be hard to get secular support, you know, not necessarily anti-religious support, but just secular support. So they have to sort of find those sources as well, where the automatic response isn't going to lead you right back to church, which is what I'm saying. You know, you're not getting everything you need from there.
Right. So it's like we're going to ask some qualified people who make you feel like you're crazy. That's so important. That is so important. Let's go to Renee. Renee from Missouri. How are you doing, Renee?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, you on the speakerphone, Renee?
No, I'm not anymore.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
I wanted to say that I'm so glad I found this this show and this topic, because I could not agree more with Candace, I believe her name is, and I will have to be getting this book, because I have a lot of strong feelings about the church and everything that's going on, and it's so difficult being a black woman, because that's like the bedrock of black women is the church. You can't say anything. You are completely blasphemous if you say, even look to say anything about, you know, the church. And the bottom line is, you have to look at the fruit. What is the fruit that is being produced right now from the church?
Mm-hmm.
Is it healthy fruit? Is it good fruit? No, it's not. And we have to look at really what's going on. And the bottom line is, you know, the black church, in my opinion, has failed the black community. And we don't want to hold the church accountable. And I feel one of the biggest problems with black people is, you know, our faith has gotten us through a lot, but also our faith is also an excuse to not take responsibility. Because a lot of times we will say, oh, well, God's going to handle it. God's going to handle it. But see, when you do that, you then kind of shrug the responsibility off yourself for what you can do about it. Now, I believe in God. I consider myself a spiritual person. But the fact of the matter is, you have to have something to go along with your faith. You have to be moving forward, too. And I feel like the church now is not pushing that. It's about money. It's about, you know, a scene. And if you look on TV, they have the pastors that have the reality shows and the houses they live in, the cars they drive, and the money that they're spending. And you have, like, for instance, as a black woman, I know a lot of young black women, and a lot of them, you know, go to church every Sunday, and they look at that as them doing something really good. But then you turn right back around, and they're pregnant again. They're not married. They're not with the man. You know, they already, when they started going to church, they had one baby. Now they got three. They got two, and they're pregnant with the third. What are you learning? What are you getting from church? If you go in every Sunday and you keep having more and more babies out of wedlock, what is the church telling you? And also I wanted to say recently something that really, really shook me up this weekend. And, I mean, man, it really made me think about a lot of things was I saw on where somebody had, it was somebody on Facebook, and now they have, and these are supposed to be Christian churches, they have where the pastors or reverends are gay, they're homosexual, and their men, their husband, boyfriend, whatever it's supposed to be, is called the first gentleman. And I showed my mom that, and we literally, I mean, wow, we were just in shock, because I feel like the church is not standing up against this stuff. They're accepting it. You know, and
you're
look,
talking
and
about accepting homosexuality?
They're accepting homosexuality. And if you're going to accept homosexuality, you're going to accept continually having children out of wedlock. You're going to accept all the craziness that's going on in the community. What are you giving? What is the difference?
So let me ask you this, because of time. Candace, I'm going to come to you as well. What do you think? Actually, before I do that, do you go to church regularly?
Yeah. I mean, I don't go every Sunday, but I try to go at least a couple times a month, once or twice a month. So if you
Why do you go? Why do you go once or twice a month?
I go once or twice a month. For me, just to take that time set apart specifically to go into when I feel a house of worship and take that time for myself to devote to God myself. And also because I go with my family and it's an experience for us together to do something that's positive. And sometimes the sermon is something I really feel they're stepping outside and they're really doing something to move me.
excuse me, and sometimes I don't. So it's just for those basic reasons why I do.
Okay, let me throw it to Candace. Candace, you're going to say something? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm not sure if, I'm not clear with your call as to whether or not she feels that homosexuality or children out of wedlock is wrong. Obviously, I feel like the only argument against homosexuality or the only argument about sex outside of wedlock is religious. And that's sort of my thing. Mm-hmm. I agree with what she's saying if the church teaches that homosexuality is wrong, or if the church is teaching that you shouldn't be having sex outside of wedlock, then, and people are still doing it, then yes, now you have people being hypocritical. You know, now you're going against what you say you value. I was just going to say, if a person is doing that and the person believes that it's wrong, then yes, they're wrong. But on a more fundamental level, I believe that women having sex out of wedlock or men being homosexual, I feel like that persecution only comes from a religious standpoint, and that outside of a holy book telling you that homosexuality is wrong, there's no other reason to say that two men shouldn't be able to be together besides
there
the spiritual.
But now,
you said that is. We're going to contain this conversation, but I want to hear you. So you're saying there is something that says two men shouldn't be together. Tell us that real short, and we can contain this conversation because of time. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I mean, just real simple. It's not even about – it's about religion, but at the same time, it's about nature. We know what's natural. We know what produces life. We know what has got all of us here. In no history has anyone been made from two men. Sexuality
is simple. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's the thing. Let's look at this conversation here, because you were talking about that what the black church is not doing, right?
Right.
Then we're also talking about what you said, the first gentleman, and now we're talking about homosexuality. But if you just kind of step outside of your own self and look at within churches, we have contradiction, right? And then I'm just going to hang on the limb and say you're saying that we nowhere anywhere but history has two men come up with a baby. I get that, but you're still also referring to the Bible, right? The Bible in the Bible it clearly. Okay, so you're referring to science?
Yes, in relation to church. Yes,
okay, in relation to church. Okay, so here's the thing. Where is the common ground? Where is that middle ground? Because I must tell you this. I'm going to be very clear about it. I don't care if a woman is with a woman, a man is with a man, you're atheist, you're religious, you're spiritual. I have no issue with it. Because the most important thing is the love between each other, humanity, and we all get to define what that love is. But we can get through this, because think about it this way. Okay, no, actually, I'm going to throw something else at you. Here's what do you think the black church should be doing? Renee, real quick. What do you think the black church should be doing?
The black church should be helping the black community.
Okay, good. Okay, hold that thought. Candace, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, you asked where is the middle ground, and I believe the middle ground is with humanism and secularism. Humanism says, I care about all of humanity, period. And I think humanity has the ability to help itself, period. And then secularism specifically says, let's keep church and state separate. So if you don't believe that homosexuality is okay, fine, keep that in your church. But don't try to institute national laws that say two men can't be together. So I feel like that's sort of where the middle ground is. If that's what you guys want to believe, fine, but don't let it bleed outside of your church doors. You know, don't teach my child at school whatever it is your religion.
I don't want my child at school being taught about two men.
that that's valuable.
So let me ask you,
and when
but
you
they
validate,
don't teach that at school. They don't teach that
But when
at
you
school.
Validate it on a state level, it does become curriculum in the school. It
okay,
has Renee, to be taught.
Renee, let me ask, Renee, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
And well, actually, I want to say something and then ask you a question because we've got some other questions. It's, and if you can be a little bit objective and look, because part of what Candace was saying, you completely agree with, and you're like, oh, my God, I really agree
oh, yeah.
with her. But mm-hmm. can you also see now that even though you agree with some of Candace's views, now there's a, something else that can't be – there's now you kind of like both like, well, we're on the end of the totem pole. You see what I'm
right.
saying? See?
Right.
The issue here is it goes far beyond homosexuality, the church. It's about us human beings where on one thing we get together. Here's an example that I use. We in America, people say, well, we're Americans. We stick together. And then you now you take
no,
religion
don't.
Into it. Well, right. Well, because we do. Then there's a black and white conversation. Then there's the Muslim and the Christian. Then the atheist. So it's like, what we got to look at is individually, we must face our own judgment, our own conflict, and find the resolution within ourselves in order to see the world correctly.
Can I just say one thing? This was just my one thing, like in linking all those things together. And I hear, you know, I totally hear what you guys are saying. And, you know, objectively, I can see where you're going, but when we talked about the black church, that's what when mm-hmm. I said about the fruit, you have to look at the fruit that's being produced. Mm-hmm. And the fruit mm-hmm. that's being produced is dysfunctional. The fruit that's being produced is not healthy. So when mm-hmm. when I talk about homosexuality and having children out of wedlock and those kind of things, these are not things that have been helping our community. They've been getting worse. We've had the continuation
right.
of the black family, and the black church is not helping with that. So that's kind of where I'm coming from.
I get what you're saying because you're looking at what's happening and how you're looking at the community. It's like all these young girls or females are having children out of wedlock. But here's
right.
one question I'll leave you with because I got to move on. Time is moving.
Okay.
Got a few minutes to go. What if one of those children that are born out of wedlock are the ones that are actually going to bring the correction on this planet that you want to see? Just think about
that. I think it's wonderful, you know,
but at the same time. Okay, go ahead. At the same time what?
At the same time, though, we have to look at what is happening with that. And the
I get that.
Yeah.
I get that. I get what is mm-hmm. happening, I see. But what I'm also saying is as we all individually pass our judgment of what is right or what is not, or what is right or what is wrong, what if one of those children are the one to bring the solution to the pain of humanity? What if they're the one to discover the healing to whatever disease, cancer, whatever you want to call it? What if they're the one to right the black church? I just want you to think about that. If you could
mm-hmm.
sit with them, think about it. I'm not saying the issues are not there, but we must have a new thought in order to have a new reality. And without a new thought, we can't have a new reality. And because one of the questions I'm going to ask Candace before we go is, we want to talk about some of the things that the black church is doing right. Because
mm-hmm.
You can't talk about what someone is doing wrong without that viewpoint living in you. Because whenever
right.
there's judgment or criticism, it's a confession. It's a confession.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is, I'm not trying to tell you you're right or wrong. I tell you where I stand. I don't have issues with homosexuality. I don't have issues. You know, there's so many issues on this planet that we're throwing around ideas and beliefs and research and stuff. But can we all get along? We need each other. If someone is dying today, if someone is dying today and they tell them what they need is a new organ and they're Christian and they believe Christianity is the only way, and then later on they find out the organ they got was from a gay woman or a gay man, they're not going to say take it out. They're not going to say take that organ out and let me die. Let's really face reality here. Let's get back to what makes us human and what joins us together. But I really got to end here because we don't have a lot of time. And, you know,
okay.
You're free to call in again to have the conversation. But I really do appreciate you calling in and even sharing where you stand.
Thank you very much, Renee.
Okay.
You're listening to the Ask Life Coach at a radio show. We're taking up some of Candace's time, but we've got another question. Candace, do you want to say anything before we take the next question? And can you stay for a little 5 more minutes or so?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine. Just two pieces of food for thought is, one, only 13% of religious families talk to their children about sexuality. So if we want to talk about babies out of wedlock and, you know, problems like that, only 13% of us are talking to our children about sex. So that's a problem right there. I'm sorry, only 13% of Christian households specifically. And the second point is that homosexuality is quite common in the animal kingdom. People don't realize that homosexuality has been around since the beginning of time. We have over 7 billion people on the planet. I don't think that homosexuality is going to cause the population to drop off. So just two pieces of food about.
Someone once said, if all the homosexual people left the church, there won't be a lot of people left. But anyway, that's a whole different conversation. So let's go for the question.
Oh, I'm hugging you guys. I'm hugging Renee. I've been on such a journey. Guys, really, we got to continue this conversation. Candace has, your statistics and the way you apply them from a humanist standpoint is quite enchanting, young lady. My God. Okay, and I just have to say this real quick before we get to the question, because if I didn't, I would be missing a big opportunity. I don't want to fight. I just want to give you a name. It's Bayard Rustin. He's a black gay man who actually is the founding father of our civil rights movement. And it's a movie called Brother Insider, and with love, oh, my God, so much love. I just say that out on the airwaves. Please don't forget all the people in the family. Okay, you ready for the next question?
Yes.
Let's go. Time is doing what time does. Keeps moving.
Okay, and thank you for that moment, guys. I really appreciate you allowing me to do that. Now, Candace, this is a question that's close to my heart. I think it's a powerful question. I'm curious about it myself. This is from Bessie. How does Candace think humanity began? What or who created it and us all? Who or what does she contribute it to? Bessie.
Okay, so I'm not an astrophysicist or, you know, I'm not a NASA professional, but I do lean on the scientific evidence. Again, I'm a naturalist, so I'm leaning on the science, air of science and what the scientific process can teach us about the world. So, of course, there's, the Big Bang Theory is the prominent and that's we could talk on a whole other show about the definition of the word theory, but scientific, the prominent belief right now is that the universe or the planet, humanity, and all of that started with the Big Bang Theory and then evolution. And I feel like if people actually studied evolution a little bit more, I think that you would find that it is really a very beautiful, very interesting process. And some people believe that evolution, you're diminishing the value of humanity, but when in reality I feel like it makes life and humanity even more precious to say, wow, look at how this natural process created all this beautiful diversity on this planet. A natural process did that. And so I believe in the scientific evidence for the creation of the world. Now, of course, scientists will admit we haven't yet figured out what caused the Big Bang Theory, and a lot of people like to apply the God of the gaps there. If we can't explain how the Big Bang Theory started, it must be God. And so, of course, I believe that that's just a piece of evidence that we're just going to have to keep, studying over the centuries to figure out. But definitely naturalist, evolution, those sorts of things, that's what I believe.
Okay, two questions, and I want to feed it in. I want to squeeze it in somehow. So from your perspective, what are two things that you can say the black church is doing right?
You said two things that I feel the black church is doing right?
Quickly, because I got enough after that.
Okay. I believe that it has the potential to have a great social network. Sometimes you find the people, maybe not necessarily the entity of the church itself, people you find them sometimes pulling together and really supporting each other. So even if you have a church that doesn't necessarily say, for example, have a food bank or give financial assistance, the people in the church sometimes are the ones who pull together and say, you know what, Sister So-and-so, I see your children need groceries. Let me take you to the store. And so that's where I say the entity of itself is not necessary. It's about humanism. It's about us taking care of each other. So I do believe that there are people inside of the entity itself who do a great job of pulling together and supporting each other. And, in the church, it's fun. You know, I feel like church can be fun. You get some good music. You get a really great cultural experience out of church. And I've been saying for years I want to socialize my daughter to various religious things because it's a very strong cultural experience, and there's a rich musical history there, and, you know, what it is to watch a person preach and, you know, do all the ums and the ahs and all of that, that's a cultural experience. And so I believe that sort of having some of that stuff there and still preserving that stuff is meaningful. There's value to that. So I would say those are some of the things I think is still doing correctly.
Right, so here's the question, because in your book there's a lot of there's a movement, movement of people that call themselves, a group of people that call themselves thinkers, there's many different things, non-believers. So in the movement, and you personally, do you have room in your consciousness? Do you see people saying, well, even though I don't have evidence, but there can be room for divinity and humanity as opposed to just one? Like, there are some things that we will never know, and we can have faith in that, and there's some things that, and we can have faith in that. So what I'm saying is, and let me be clear, when I talk about God, I'm not talking about a man in the sky. I'm talking about this power present that lives in us. That's how I describe it. It is the reason why you and I are having this conversation. It is that power that breathes us, the animated force. Now, so is there room in where you are for a world where there's room for the unknown, which is the divinity, and where there is the known and proven, the science of it, and them coming together without contradicting one another?
Let me say it this way. I do believe that, as I told you at the beginning, I definitely believe that there are things, like I said, what does it mean to have emotional connection? What does it mean to feel? I believe that there are plenty of things like that we can't explain, and so, yes, there's room for stuff that you can't explain, but you can still believe in and you can still appreciate and you can still lean on it, even though you can't see it. So I believe that there's room for that. However, I would stop just short, personally, I would probably just stop just short of calling it divinity or calling it a god or calling it something outside of the realm of the natural world, basically. I feel like it's still part of the natural world. We just haven't figured it out yet. So there's room for having belief that you can't really put your finger on, absolutely. But like I said, for just me personally, and I think a lot of people in the movement would stop just shy of calling that, giving that a spiritually connotated term, because we fought so hard to get away from the spiritual connotations and to sort of fought our way out of all that muck and mire that's involved in it. So we try to be very careful about the terminology that we use because we don't want to give the wrong impression. So I'm with you to a certain extent.
I understand clearly. I understand. I have so enjoyed this conversation with you. And there are many more conversations we can have on the show, which is not a problem to bring you back. And thank you. Thank you for living the example of what you believe or what you are learning. And even in times when you're afraid to speak up, there's something in you about you that still causes you to express what you feel. I've really enjoyed the conversation, my sister. Thank you very much, Candace.
Thank you. I've loved it.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Wow. We took it to almost the end. I have so many more questions that I wanted to ask Candace. And it's good to have conversations like this. And I also am grateful for Renee calling in. For me, it highlights the real issue here. The issue goes beyond churches, spiritual beliefs, religious beliefs, whatever you want to call it. It is about the challenges that we have within ourselves.
You know, and where, you know, great thing is when they said, you know, I agree with a lot of what Candy said, but then there was other parts where we, where they disagreed. And it's not just Candace and Renee, but in life, those of us who say we're spiritual. Some people are religious. They say, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. Or people go to church under the title Christian, but still see themselves as spiritual. There's those of us who say we're spiritual, New Thought, metaphysics, New Age, whatever you want to call it, New Age, No Age, Now Age. But the truth is, life is so much more than what you believe. Life is so much more than what you can touch. And as I always say, and I'll say it here, you don't have to believe me. You just have to go on your own journey. Because each and every one of us, sharing and teaching what we know, what we believe. Some of the things were passed down to us. But the truth is, if I reach out to you, would you stretch out your hands in the name of love and grab me, even though we may disagree? If I'm hurting, if somebody else is hurting, if someone is hungry, would you say, well, I don't believe like I do? Because it doesn't matter what the title is. It doesn't matter what you believe. Can you open the heart, your heart, to welcome somebody home? That's the question. Intellectual masturbation is good for a while, but we must come back to the heart. And we must all be about our own soul salvation. Life is good. It's getting better. I have so enjoyed the show. I love you. I bless you. I appreciate you. And I thank God for you. Be love. It is the essence of who you are. Love is your essence. Be true to yourself and allow yourself to be loved. You get to hear a little bit of Carlton Pearson. Everything must change. Even what you believe now will change. The struggle you're going through will change. The excitement you're feeling will change. Oh, life is not a game to win. Life is a partner. She's invited you to dance with her and go on a journey. Everything must change. To find out more about Carlton Pearson, his website address is bishoppearson.com. Peace and blessings. I love you. See you tomorrow.
Nothing and no one goes unchanged. There are not many things in life can be sure of. Except rain comes from the clouds, the sun lights up the sky, and hummingbirds do fly. Winter turns to spring, wounded heart will heal, yes it will, but never much too soon. Yes, everything must change. Become the old, mysteries do unfold, yes they do, cause that's the way of time. Nothing and no one goes unchanged. Except rain comes from the clouds, the sun lights up the sky, farmer's ground is plowed, people live and people die, yeah, but still we can revive.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting in the planet. Enjoy the show.
Life Conversations. We dare you to live your best life.